Thanks for coming in, Mr. Mahoney. Do you have your member ID card?
Yep, I have it right here in the FEP Blue app. See?
Great.
It's awesome. The app can also help me find a provider and keep tabs on my deductibles.
Okay, can I...
Oh, yeah, and my out-of-pocket spending and visit limits, and I can call the nurse line.
I'm really glad it does all that, but I only need to see your member ID card.
Oh, that's it? Why didn't you say so?
Fearless is just one tap away. With the new FEP Blue app from Blue Cross and Blue Shield, you can access your health benefits on the go. Download it now at fepblue.org/app.
Board. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, reviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, can you feel it? Can you feel it in the air? Can you feel the excitement, the anticipation? It's like Christmas morning when you were 6 years old and you could barely get to sleep. It's like a major week as Tiger's coming back. He's making another return to the golf course in his Hero World Challenge this week. Never before has so much been made of a return to golf than the curiosity and excitement surrounding Woods' return this week. Oh, Carlos, it's a big story. But before we talk about that, the top stories this week are, besides Tiger, of course, Jason Day faltered in Australia but is healthy again. Four-time winner in Hong Kong, Miguel Angel Jimenez, part of 63, but Wade Ormsby got the big check. And Ryan Belangi joins us tonight to talk about gambling on golf. That should be fun. Carlos, we got another great show lined up for our listeners, so... Let's go.
Let's go. I can't wait. I can't wait to talk about Tiger today. But that's going to have to wait, unfortunately, because that's part of our four call. That's part of our Par 5 news. We're going to include it in betting on golf. I mean, everything today is going to have something about Tiger Woods at some point. So don't worry. The only place that we're not going to mention it is in the Weekend Backstream, because he didn't play last week. So we're going to talk to you about the two tournaments that were on the major tours, and Fred is going to start with one big one down in Australia. It's one of the two biggest tournaments in Australia on the PGA Tour of Australia, and that is the Emirates Australian Open. Fred, Jordan Spieth went down there. Jason Day went down there. Which one of those two won that tournament?
Well, Jason Day gave it a shot, but he didn't quite get her done, I'm afraid. Cameron Davis. You know that name, right? Everybody knows that name.
Yeah,
made three front nine birdies and added two more, plus an eagle on the back nine. After a birdie at number 10, he holed his approach at the par 4 12th for an eagle. A birdie at the last hole left him 11 under par, and no one in the final groups could catch him. Davis had fired a first-round 63, but successive rounds over the next 2 days of 72-74 left him well down the leaderboard. His final round 64 moved him up seven spots to finish one stroke better than Jonas Blix and Matt Jones, who both fired 68. Day, Jason, you mentioned Jason Day, he held a 54-hole lead. He was 10 under, but did not play well on Sunday. A final round, two over par, 73, dropped him to fifth, and the rust of not being in contention showed. I just got to see a couple shots he hit. One was in the rough, and he tried to run it up to the green. It was kind of a rescue shot, and he hit it so badly, he turned it over in tall grass, and it ran out and ran down in the water and subsequently made double. It was about that time that I clicked it off. And I saw he wasn't going to do well, and I couldn't bear to watch. Both Blix and Jones were left wondering what could have been. Blix made a double at the par 4 ninth, while Jones went out in 38, but rallied on the back nine with a 630. The other big names in the tournament, Jordan Spieth, you mentioned him, who won here in 2014, fired a final round 67 to move up nine spots to eighth. A side note, is that the top three players in the top 10 who were not already qualified for the Open Championship next year earn a spot in the 2018 Open Championship at Carnoustie. Cameron Davis, Jonas Blix, and Matt Jones can book their flights to Scotland in July. This was the 20th time in the 102-year history of the Australian Open that was played at the Australian Golf Club just outside of Sydney. Jock Hutchison was involved in the initial design. Alistair McKenzie, one of my favorites, added his touch to this masterpiece, with Jack Nicklaus doing the latest updates in the 70s and again in 2013. Carlos, I hope I live long enough to get to Australia someday. I want to see some of these fantastic golf courses along the sand belt there. They just look phenomenal on TV. I'd love to see them firsthand. You know, this was an unusually weak field for the Australian Open. As a pair of big-name Aussies skipped the event, both Adam Scott and Mark Leishman took the week off. And Aussie Open officials are seeking PGA Tour co-sanctioning to build field strength in the future and also hopefully bring in a few sponsors dollars. Jason Day and Jordan Spieth were both paid $1 million appearance fees. Along with Day and Spieth, Jeff Ogilvie and Mike Weir were the only major champions in the field, and Weir and Ogilvie haven't done much lately. The winner, Cameron Davis, received a whopping $225,000 Australian dollars, which calculates to about $171,000 U.S. The total purse was only $1.25 million Australian. That's less than some Web.com tour events in the United States. Who outside of Australia is going to play for that kind of money? I mean, that won't cover fuel for the private jet, Carlos. You know, this tournament has a deep history. Former champions include Gary Player. He won it 7 times. Jack Nicklaus won 6 times here. Greg Norman won 5. Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy have both won in the last 4 years they won between them. But the tournament is now a long way from being regarded as one of the best events in the world like it used to be. It's kind of a sad state of affairs in Australia. They need to grab a couple of big-name sponsors and use some of that appearance money to draw more a recognizable field, Carlos. That's a really good tournament. They need to spruce that thing up. They need to get something going down there. Only have a couple big names in the field. My goodness, you're in Sydney. You're in one of the most beautiful places in the world. It's summer down there. The weather looks fantastic. They need to get that thing built up a little bit.
Well, at least they have the points. The ranking points from the official World Golf Rankings is really high. It's 32 points for the winner, no matter the strength of the tournament, of the strength of the field. So all they need, like you said, they have everything, the perfect setting, perfect weather, because it's summer down there right now. They have a good ranking for them there. So that, what's left is, like you say, maybe a little more of the pricing, a better purse definitely would attract a lot more players down there because everything else is already there. Jordan Spieth, he's a defending champion. He was trying to win for the 3rd time in 4 years, but he never seemed comfortable down there at the Australian Golf Club where he lapped the field 2 or 3 years ago. Earlier in the tournament, he couldn't break 70 over the first 3 rounds. He posted earlier scores of 70, 71, and 70 for a tournament total of 600-78. He really had a great finish. He closed with an eagle there at the Australian Open. But also, he was without his regular caddy, Michael Greller, who stayed in the U.S. after the recent birth of his son, and Spieth's longtime coach, Australian Cameron McCormick, was there on the back this week, and he definitely didn't have it going earlier on. He finished well, but also a good tournament for him considering everything else. As for Cameron Davis, he was considered one of Australia's most promising young players, but he had been struggling to move up the golf rankings since turning pro in October of 2016. He was the world number 1,494. He was even lower than Tiger. Now he joins the honor roll of champions engraved on the Stonehaven Cup. Beautiful cup that they give up there. And like you said, Fred, he earned himself a place at next year's British Open. By the way, the Australian Open is the first of 15 events making up the Open qualifying series for next year. So we'll see. Now there's only one more tournament there in the Australian PGA Tour, but we'll talk about that one a little later. There was another tournament that it was co-sanctioned by the Asian Tour and the European Tour. It is the UBS Hong Kong Open, where Wade Ornsby began the final day a stroke behind the 54-hole leader, SSP Chaurasia from India, and he found himself four behind through nine holes. I mean, it looks like Chaurasia had it going, but he stumbled with a triple bogey on the ninth hole, which opened the door for the chasing pack. He came back to them, including Ornsby. So Ornsby played a strong back nine that included three birdies, and when he reached the final hole, then Ornsby was having a two-shot lead. The 34-year-old's advantage was cut back to one when Rafa Cabrera Bello birdied the 17th. Ornsby then three-putted the 18th green to fall back to 11-under in a tie with Cabrera Bello. A playoff looked likely, but when the Spaniard's second shot to the last found a greenside bunker and he failed to save par, the title went to Ornsby. So Cabrera Bello finished in a tie for second with Americans Julian Suri, who's really playing really, really good there in the European Tour. He graduated from the Challenge Tour and is playing great. He won there on the European Tour last year. And Paul Peterson, plus Sweden's Alexander Bjork, finished their tie for second with Cabrera Bello. 2017 Race to Dubai winner Tommy Fleetwood, he enjoyed a good start to his 2018 European Tour campaign. He finished alone in sixth place, just two shots behind the winner. So Tommy is really picking up the form that he had earlier last year. He couldn't quite find the spark he needed to push on for victory in the final round, but he closed with a 69, made up of 17 pars and just a single birdie. SSP Chaurasia, he couldn't recover from that triple bogey on the ninth and further dropped shots on the run for home. We saw him finish back in the tie for seventh. Four-time champion Miguel Angel Jimenez enjoyed a superb final round of 63. He just knows how to play there. Golf's most interesting man will be 54 in January, but he proved he can still compete at the highest level, garnering seven birdies and no bogeys in that seven-under par round. He finished tied for seventh with Michael Laurencin. This was a quality field, let me tell you. Ornsby defeated there. Besides Fleetwood, Cabrera Bello and Miguel Angel was there. It included also Justin Rose and Kiradesh Avi Barnrat, who finished T10. Sergio Garcia and Matthew Pace Fitzpatrick finished T19. Eduardo Molinari finished T31. And Sanchai Jaidi, T54. So there were some pretty good players going down there. Wade Ornsby secured his first European Tour victory in his 264th start on the circuit. Fred, the 34-year-old, first played a full season on the European Tour back in 2004, and he has had to come through Q School four times in total, but now he's happy he has an exemption up to the end of the 2020 year, and also he'll be next year's British Open.
Yep, big win for him for sure. Name we haven't heard a lot of lately for sure. And good win. Hey, guess what we're going to talk about? Guess what we're going to talk about next, Carlos?
Now it's time for the four call. The quick previews where we preview the weekend's action. And it's time. It's time, finally. The much anticipated return in golf history. It is. Bar none. Is upon us. Tiger Woods is back. I am excited. The world is still excited about it. Fred, I have missed Tiger. I mean, whether watching him set new levels of golfing excellence in his pomp over a decade ago, or more recently, thinning wedges, duffing chips, and unable to activate his glutes, I mean, the current world 1,199 remains a compelling character both on and off the course. Having started just three events since the beginning of 2016 while dealing with chronic back injuries since 2014, Tiger, for the second straight season, has chosen the Hero World Challenge as his return destination. Last year, he finished in 15th place out of 17, 14 shots out of the lead, but he led the field in birdies made. Yes, you heard it. He led the field in birdies made, and that's what made a lot of people say there were some flashes there about the old Tiger Woods. But when he stalks his way down the first fairway this Thursday, he will be playing alongside the PGA Tour Player of the Year, Justin Thomas. Then all of his injuries and off-the-course issues will be swept aside. There aren't many players, let me tell you, that who can overshadow Justin Thomas these days, but Tiger is one of them. He has 79 PGA Tour wins, which is one less than the remainder of the Hero World Challenge field combined. Tiger will be back where he was meant to be, and golf fans will get to see a legend play again. Rumors recently have been swirling that Tiger is crushing the ball off the tee, but that really isn't important. Trying to hit the ball too hard has been Tiger's issue. In his last couple teaser videos this summer, Tiger showcased a level, smooth swing ripe for a fade, a swing that could last. Power was the name of Woods' old game, but that time has moved on. Now, Woods needs to find to win with his mind and not with his body. Though this week's event, played in the Bahamas, is not an official PGA Tour tournament, it does boast an impressive field and world ranking points. Who are the favorites? Well, we have to talk about Justin Thomas. He has won three times since mid-August when he captured the PGA Championship, with a runner-up finish also thrown into the mix. Thomas has climbed 19 spots in the world ranking already this year, and he has now his sights set on world number one. Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson, and Brooks Koepka, all joining Thomas as top American stars, are also in the field trying to end 2017 with a win. Race to Dubai winner Tommy Fleetwood and red-hot Justin Rose could also make some noise this week. Rose was forced to withdraw last year due to his own back injury, but he has now two wins in his last four starts. The defending champion is Hideki Matsuyama. Last year, Hideki had taken over the world of golf around this time last year, and he won the 2016 Hero World Challenge by two strokes over Henrik Stenson, capping a stretch of four wins in five events. That's as red hot as you can call it. He's back in the field this week, ranked fifth in the world with five top finishes in two of his last three starts. He also had endured a mid-season slump, so he's like also surging back. Now, if you want to know the pairings, they're easy. There are not many players here. There's only 16 players. So Hideki Matsuyama and Francesco Molinari will be teeing it up at 11:10 in Eastern time. At 11:21, it will be Charlie Hoffman and Kevin Chappell. 11:32, Patrick Reed and Daniel Berger. 11:43, Tommy Fleetwood and Justin Rose. That would be a great one. 1 and 2 in the recently concluded Race to Dubai. That's one to watch. Also, at 11:54 will be Henrik Stenson and Alex Noren, by far the two most prolific male Swedish players. At 12:05 is the expected one. I'll be glued to the TV watching Tiger Woods and Justin Thomas. 12:16, Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka. Those are the past two U.S. Open champions. They will be really bumping it out of the tee. At 12:27, Ricky Fowler and Kevin Kisner. And finally, at 12:38, it will be Jordan Spieth and Matt Kuchar. 1-2 at the Open last year, so great to see them there. Fred, it's no surprise to see Tiger Woods choose his event to return, since it's hosted by him and all profits benefit the Tiger Woods Foundation. With a litany of staring names in the field, the Tiger is going to have his work cut out for him no matter what good a shape he's in. But there's only one question that we'll finally get an answer to. What if?
Yeah, Carlos, I don't know. What do we call this? Do we call this the comeback part due? Can you believe it's been 17 years since he won the three majors in 2000 and then capped off the Tiger Slam in 2001? Can you believe it's been that long? You know, last year when Tiger tried to make the comeback, he hit it all over the lot and his chipping was reminiscent of a 20 handicapper. So my question is, will we see the same type of futile effort from Woods this time? Everything that we're hearing is, you know, Tiger's out driving Dustin Johnson 50% of the time, but there's been little mention of his putting and chipping. After their round on Friday, after Thanksgiving there, Brad Faxon did mention that Tiger looked like he had all the touch shots down. On the very first hole, he had a pitch shot over a bunker that looked great. Hit some tough little pitch shots, tough chip shots, and hit some close. They gave him they even gave him some tap-ins. Patrick Reed said today that he caught up with Tiger yesterday, played nine holes with him, and he said Tiger looked much more positive than he did last year. Last year, he was apprehensive about hitting certain shots because of the pain he was going to experience. This year, he didn't see any of that hesitation. Reed also said he has a little pep in his step. He was in high spirits. I was shocked how fluid his swing was and how far the ball was going. He had some speed behind it. He's always been a little longer than me, but some of those drives today, he got it out there. He was hitting the stinger here and there, hitting bunker shots, hitting balls out of the rough. There just wasn't any hesitation in his body to hit those shots. That's key. If he stays healthy, we'll see Tiger again. So, Carlos, you know, playing a casual round is a lot different than trying to post a score on the PGA Tour, but with all of that being said, can you imagine if he actually performs well this week, the hype that's going to surround golf at the beginning of the year? I mean, it's going to be astronomical. You know, I never get too excited about these postseason exhibition things, but this has a much different feel, and I'm like you, I'm going to be watching Thursday. I can't wait to see, you know, what he looks like in that first round, especially those first holes and how he closes out the round. So, Carlos, anything else you want to say before I go on to the Australian PGA?
I have like half an hour to talk about this, but I'll try to do a couple of minutes.
We're going to talk about – I got a half an hour coming up. Yeah, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was not long ago that the only use of a golf club Tiger Woods had was as a crutch to get out of bed. But definitely, yeah. I saw the press conference today. I wanted to see him more than anything, his body language. He spoke at the press conference ahead of his comeback, and he said this is very different, and you could see it. He was still struggling last year with pain, and he even admitted that he was taking drugs and top of drugs just to trying to kill the nerve pain. He doesn't have to do that right now. He's not doing it. He said that it was like, and I have it written down here. He said it was like someone hitting your body about 200 times a day. And the thing is that I didn't know it was coming. Man, that's something that I cannot even imagine how it was. So he said also he thought, how long will this fuse bag hold up? And he said that his doctor said, you will be good for the rest of your life. And that's still trying to sink in, he said. And finally, what we have seen also from this report, and I saw him a couple of shots of him on the TV hitting the practice that he was having there. He looked great. He looked fit with that blue shirt that he was wearing today. He was ready. I mean, he looked very sharp. And I can't wait. Even Justin Thomas, who's going to play with him, I remember he saying that in the 2000 PGA Championship was his first memory from a golf tournament. He was just 7 years old when he was there from the Valhalla clubhouse when Tiger birdied the 72nd hole and then beat Bob May in a three-hole playoff that included Wood's famous finger point at the hole as he cherries in a birdie putt. That's classic, classic video right now. I mean, but like you said, that was 17 years ago, and it was that event that inspired Justin to become a professional golfer. And over the years, Woods has transitioned from Thomas Idle to a friend and a mentor. You might remember we reported that not long ago that they had dinner together after Thomas won the Wanamaker Trophy for himself and have competed in short game contests in Woods' backyard. So he credits Woods for inspiring the way of young stars who have dominated the PGA Tour recently. Those are the very same that he's going to be right now facing. Well, and that is part of that this excitement and this thing that everybody wants to see him playing against. That last season, there were a record 18 victories by players younger than 25. Thomas have had five of them. So, but I mean, anyway, it's going to be great to see if he, like you say, if he is on top form, the expectation, if he shows there and competes and is there on Sunday on the top of the leaderboard or near it, if he finishes in the top five or the top 10, I would say, next year, the expectations for the Masters and the golf is going to get a huge infusion. We are seeing it now, and this is a Hero World Challenge, which has 16 players. Imagine when the full fields start coming again, Fred.
It's amazing. Everybody's just sitting on the edge of their seat in anticipation. I truly, it's like being a little kid at Christmas. It has that feeling. So I hope it doesn't disappoint. You know, I try not to get too excited about it, but deep down, I can't wait. Hey, Carlos, the Hero World Challenge is not the only tournament in the world this week. They're playing down under again. They're staying there for the Australian PGA. Both Adam Scott and Mark Leishman, who skipped the Australian Open last week, are scheduled to play in the Australian PGA Championship on the Gold Coast. Of course, this tournament is co-sanctioned by the European Tour and will also boast that the Masters champ, your guy, Sergio Garcia, will tee it up at the RACV Royal Pines Resort. The players will all be vying for a piece of the 1.5 million Australian total purse, with approximately 260,000 Australian going to the winner. The two marquee pairings this week involve American Harold Varner, who got his first professional win here last year. He is paired for the first 2 days with Leishman and Matt Jones. Adam Scott and Sergio are grouped with last week's winner in Hong Kong, Wade Ormsby. They're going to be the other marquee pairing. The event can be seen beginning Wednesday evening, tomorrow evening, and it goes Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday evenings in prime time on the Golf Channel from 9:30 to 1 a.m. each day. Carlos, also want to mention that the LPGA is holding their Q School this week. 166 young women are competing for 20 cards for the 2018 season. This being held on the Jones and the Hills courses at LPGA International. If there's a tie for 20th, there'll be a three-hole aggregate stroke playoff. If players remain tied, they'll have a hole-by-hole playoff, sudden death. Women from 31 countries are in final stage. The field also features 73 individuals who held LPGA membership in 2017. The oldest player in the field is Lori Kane, who's 52. Let's see, what do we got here? 33 players who started stage one have made it all the way through, plus eight amateurs. That begins on Wednesday and ends on Sunday, so it's five rounds. And also, Carlos, we want to mention that the Champions Tour is having their Q School this week, and they had their first rounds actually today. Brian Henninger shot a 61 to lead by two shots over Neil Lancaster. Rafael Gomez, Mark Walker, and Tommy Tolles round out the top five after the first round, but they got three more rounds to go. So they're playing out in Scottsdale. So we'll have some new Champions Tours guys coming out of there. And Carlos, unless you got something else to talk about from those, I'm going to talk about Ohio Golf in a little bit.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention that the PGA of Australia, Australian PGA Championship, that's just like the Emirates Australian Open last week are the two most important. This is the home tournament of the Australian PGA and dates back to 1905. So it's really, really they give the Stonehaven Cup in the first one, and now here they get the Joe Kirkwood Cup. So it's really a lot of tradition going into this two tournaments, and it's going to be a great weekend for them there, the final, the ending, the closing of the PGA of Australia Tour season.
Carlos, the Ohio Golf Journal offers golfholics a diverse collection of topics that cover every area of golf. Tips to help your game, rules, explanations, equipment review, travel to the best golf resorts, history and opinion on current golf issues are covered every month. Ohio Golf Journal has some of the best golf writers that provide their knowledge of the game in every issue. In the November issue, we talk about the Amateur Golf Alliance and how it's helping amateur golfers, the things golfaholics are thankful for. We feature golf travel opportunities to Bryant Park in Greensboro, North Carolina, and Reynolds Lake Oconee on the Georgia-South Carolina state line. Plus, Ed Travers, who we had on the show, proposes that arguments to roll back the golf ball are dangerously wrong. Visit OhioGolfJournal.com, click on the cover, and read the whole magazine, or just choose any article from the website that catches your eye. You can also find more golf news and information on Back 9 Report TV on Roku. In the latest Back 9 Report TV episode, we cover Inverness Club's renovation by Andrew Green, the theft of the Charles Schwab Cup from Bernhard Langer, Fred Ridley begins a new era at Augusta National Golf Club, and technology is completely changing the face of golf forever. So, for a diverse take on golf news, watch Back 9 Report TV on Roku, Carlos.
And with that, we close the four call, our quick previews. Now, we move to our Par 5 news. Every week, we pick five recent topics happening in the world of golf and tell you all about it. Fred, I said that we're going to talk about Tiger Woods show long. So let's talk a little bit more about Tiger Woods. And this
you
time,
just
including,
can't get it.
No, we can't get enough Tiger Woods.
We just can't get enough.
We can't. And now we're going to include Donald Trump. Tell us all about that.
Donald and Tiger together. Oh, my God.
That's record breaking. I mean, that's ratings breaking. Yes. Forget about it. There's nobody else listening when we say we're going to talk about Donald Trump and Tiger Woods in the same. No, nobody else will listen to anything else.
That's exactly it, man. This is it. It doesn't get any better. President Donald Trump brought golf into media attention over the long holiday weekend. He found time to tee it up with world number one Dustin Johnson, some guy named Tiger Woods, and Brad Faxon on Friday. Plus, Jack Nicklaus and his son Gary got in some hacks with the president on Saturday. That's a pretty good weekend of golf, Carlos. Johnson, Woods, and Faxon visited Trump to play around with the president. Faxon, who's a member at Trump Jupiter, said in an article in Golf Week that he received a call from the director of golf asking if he would be interested in filling out a foursome with the president, Tiger Woods, and himself on Friday after Thanksgiving. Later, he learned that Dustin Johnson had been added to the mix, and the director of golf, his buddy, dropped out. Faxon had played with Trump on several occasions, but not since becoming president. He had never played with Dustin Johnson and not played with Tiger since 2005. So he said this was going to be a little nerve-wracking for the eight-time PGA Tour winner. See, Carlos, even former PGA Tour champions get nervous on the first tee sometimes. A friendly wager was consummated on the first tee. Tiger and DJ would be teamed against the old guys. They would play from the back tees at 7,600 yards, and the president and Fax would play from the blues approximately 6,500 yards. Man, that's like what I play from. So play it forward, people. Even the pros do it. Faxon went on to write, Tiger looked great to me. He was happy and more than anything, he's finally pain-free. The issues he had with the back and the last couple of comebacks seem to be gone. He looked effortless. He looked free. He had power. He went on to add that what he saw was a happy Tiger who was able to perform and compete. He wasn't ready to say he would win right away, but is at least able to practice and enjoy the game. Faxon also said he left a 9-foot birdie on the lip to win the match, and it ended in a tie, just in case you wanted to know. Then we're really talking about Trump here, but we're getting into a lot of Tiger talk. So on Saturday, Trump joined golfing legend Jack and Gary Nicklaus at Trump National at Jupiter for a friendly game and gave Jack a chance to practice for the PNC Father and Son Challenge coming up December 13th through 17th, when he will be paired with his grandson, 15-year-old Gary G.T. Nicklaus. Trump took a couple of days off in Florida and got in a few shots with some very high-profile golfers. Carlos, it's good to be the president.
I mean, when you play Dustin Johnson, the world number one, you play Tiger Woods, the legend, and you play the other legend, Jack Nicklaus. I mean, it's good to be Trump, definitely, in that sense. But, yeah, it's more reports about Tiger. Can't wait. The key here, of course, if he wins, that would be icing on the cake. But I think the key, Fred, to me, is not if he's crushing it, if he's playing good, is how he's looking. He's looking happy. He's very different from the doom and gloom Tiger Woods that we saw the past few years. It's totally, definitely. We have been saying also that a lot of it has to do with his mind. How is it right now? And even like you said, Patrick Reed said he had a bump in his step. So he definitely is looking great, and I can't wait to see him play. Hey, let's talk about Davis Love III. He wants to become the oldest winner in PGA Tour history. But that goal will now have to wait at least 3 months. He turns 54 in April, but he had hip replacement surgery last Tuesday. Within hours of having hip replacement surgery, Davis Love III was back doing what he does best, and that is keeping busy. He planned to begin giving more intensive therapy and rehabilitation on Wednesday and was scheduled to be released from the hospital later that afternoon. According to Love's doctors, there were no complications during the surgery, and his recovery time is estimated around 3 to 4 months. He had surgery to repair a torn labrum in his left hip on July of last year and was initially hesitant to have this replacement surgery. He says he can start putting almost immediately and should be able to start hitting wedges within a few weeks. Dr. Tom Bowers, who is a physical therapist at the Houston Orthopedic Clinic in Columbus, Georgia, who has treated Fred Couples, Phil Mickelson, Greg Norman, and Brad Faxon, will be overseeing Love's recovery and ultimately decide when he's ready to resume normal golf activity. Apart from last year's hip surgery, Davis had neck surgery in 2013 and a procedure on his right foot in 2015 to correct two dislocated toes and a digital contracture, commonly known as hammer toe, and is confident the recovery process will go as smoothly this time as well. Although Love said he plans to temper his expectations for this most recent recovery, his goal is to be ready to play by the Florida Swing next March. Fred will have to be on the watch next year for Davis, who was inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame earlier this year. He's the third oldest winner in history when he won the 2015 Wyndham Championship at age 51. Sam Snead is the oldest ever when he won the 1965 Greater Greensboro Open at age 52. So a win by Love would beat Snead's record by 2 years and would certainly be one of the top stories of next year if it happens.
Yeah, that would be big. Julius Boros won when he was in his 50s also. He held the record for quite a while, I think, before Snead got it. But that's something. And these guys, they say golf is not a rough sport. And, these guys have injuries and stuff you don't even know about. Look what all Jason Day's gone through, Brad Snedeker. You can go on and on and on, all the guys that have injuries that they have to take care of. So, Carlos, Greg Norman seems to be in the news more these days, and he said recently, today's pros are not good as in his day. You know, every generation thinks that. You know, when they you know, they get older and they're sitting on the couch or in their easy chair. Oh, we had it. We were better back in our day. Well, I'm not sure about that. They play a little different game than what Greg played, maybe. Norman talked with CNN last week and said he is appalled at current tour pros' lack of knowledge of the overall game. He cited Patrick Reed using clubs that were not fit correctly for his swing last season. Greg said, I used to hand make all my equipment, assemble my shafts, weigh up my grips, get the spine angles of my shafts exactly the same for every iron so I could get absolute consistency with performance of the shaft. The Shark is impressed by how far the young guys hit the ball, but thinks their lack of quality short games do not produce consistent results on the course. Until Tiger Woods came along, Norman held the record for maintaining the world number one ranking for 331 weeks. That's consistency, which the Australian feels is lacking among the current crop of professionals, especially when it comes to their short game. He may have a point, as we have seen so many reach the top spot and then immediately drop down. However, Carlos, I blame overzealous managers chasing appearance fees and a longer season for burning out top players today. Greg also said, if you look at today's top players, their distance control inside 150 yards with a wedge is quite amazingly poor. These guys are 20 feet short, 30 feet left, 20 feet long. Their distance control is not consistent. It could be just the way they play. When it works, it works, and when it doesn't, it doesn't. You know, I'm going to digress here just a little bit, and we'll go back to Tiger a minute. But when Tiger first came up, he did not have real good control. You know, he was all skinny and, you know, limber and loose, and he had that long swing. And so it was hard for him to control his iron shots, his distances, especially with his short wedges, because he was just so loose and free. He had to get a little bit older and learn to tighten up his swing a little bit to control those wedges. Dustin Johnson, same thing. You know, we saw Dustin have to learn how to hit those wedges from 150 yards in to really become a really good player. So, you know, maybe Greg's got a point here. But Greg even gave a tip of the cap to the ladies as being more consistent. While the distances being achieved in the men's game are impressive, when it comes to accuracy, they're being completely outdone by the LPGA Tour. Last season, 86 women hit more fairways off the tee than the leading PGA Tour player, Ryan Armour, who hit 72%. Lexi Thompson was the leading woman with a remarkable 86%. Thompson also led the way with approach shots, leading 77.7% of greens hit in regulation, and there were 32 women ahead of the top-performing male player, Martin Flores, who hit 70% of greens. It's consistency. A lot of people think that watching a lady swing is something they can relate more to than one of the long hitters, where it's just something we cannot achieve. But women show more long, swinging, tempo-like swings that amateurs can relate to. Well, I will disagree with that. First of all, I have never seen an amateur that can get a full turn like Michelle Wee when she wants to take it all the way back, or just pretty much any woman, when they decide to take a full backswing and a full follow-through, it's amazing the total turn that they have. I've never seen any man ever have that kind of ability. Finally, Greg did say something that we can agree on. The LPGA Tour is just as exciting and informative for golfers as the PGA Tour, Carlos.
And definitely I have to agree with you on that one. Hey, let's talk about the European captain for the Ryder Cup and now also for the Eurasia Cup, Thomas Bjorn. He has named a power-packed lineup for their title defense against Asia in the third edition of the Eurasia Cup presented by DRB Highcom at the Glenmary Golf Club and Country Club from January 12th to the 14th. Teams Europe 12-man side was unveiled yesterday and boasts a combined 63 European Tour titles, with six of them having made at least one appearance in the Ryder Cup. Headlining the 10 automatic qualifiers from this year's Race to Dubai rankings is newly crowned European Tour number one Tommy Fleetwood of England and his three compatriots, Tyrrell Hatton, Ross Fisher, and Matthew Fitzpatrick. Henrik Stenson and Alex Noren, both of Sweden, Spain's Rafa Cabrera Bello, Austria's Bernd Wiesberger, Ireland's Paul Doon, and Belgium's Thomas Peters are the other six to have made the cut based on their final point standings of the just-concluded European Tour season. Bjorn, who is also Europe's captain for next September's Ryder Cup, further strengthened the squad by naming the experienced Paul Casey of England and Frenchman Alexander Levy as his wildcard picks. Of the 12, Fisher, Fitzpatrick, and Wiesberger were part of the side that hammered Tim Asia 18.5 to 5.5 2 years ago. Bjorn added that he did not have to think twice about selecting world number 14 Casey, that was a Ryder Cup winner in 2004 and 2006, but that wasn't available for a selection in the last edition after giving up his European Tour membership to focus on the PGA Tour. But he announced recently that he was going again to compete fully there in the European Tour to make this next year's Ryder Cup. You might remember he was also controversially overlooked by Captain Colin Montgomery. I mean, Monty is far from being a controversial figure. In 2010, despite being ranked inside the world's top 10, but after rejoining the European Tour for the 2018 season, he will be now in the frame for a place in the team at Le Golf National in the autumn. Bjorn, who will also lead the Ryder Cup, said in a statement, I'm going to read it to you. Once Paul announced he was rejoining the European Tour and therefore making himself available for selection, the decision was a no-brainer for me. He is a wonderful player with a lot of experience, and I think the young guys can learn a lot from him. He's also got a fantastic match play record, and not just in Ryder Cups. He's comfortable where he is in his life right now, and with him wanting to be part of the Eurasia Cup team also shows his commitment to the European Tour and the road he's now on. End of quote. Fred, this move shows how much the Europeans want the comp back, and they are realigning for that encounter at Le Golf National next year. I tell you, this next Ryder Cup is going to be loaded on both sides and will be one for the ages, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you know, just think, if Lee Westwood wouldn't have been a team and we'd had the kid from Scotland that played so well.
Russell Knox, yeah.
If they'd had him, and then if you throw Paul Casey into that mix yet, along with Rory, and Sergio is still so competitive, Justin Rose, and, you know, on and on. They are very good. They're going to be in Europe. They're going to be in France. So, man, that's not that far away either, Carlos. That'll be here before we know it. So, let's talk a little amateur golf. We like to talk, you know, we like to make sure that we cover amateur golf every once in a while. I know we talk of a lot of pros, cover stuff around the world. But Global Golf Post every year puts out their top amateurs, and they have a whole listing. And it was in their issue that came out on Monday, listing the top amateurs for 2017. In all, they recognized 195 amateurs representing 25 different countries. You know, Richard Tufts, who is in the World Golf Hall of Fame, once said, "Amateurism, after all, must be the backbone of any sport, golf or otherwise. In my mind, an amateur is one who competes in a sport for the joy of playing, for the companionship that it affords, for health-giving exercise, and for relaxation from more serious matters. As part of this lighthearted approach to the game, he accepts cheerfully all adverse breaks, is considerate of his opponent, plays the game fairly and squarely in accordance with its rules, maintains self-control, and strives to do his best. not in order to win, but rather as a test of his own skill and ability. These are his only interests, and in them, material considerations have no part. The return which amateur sport will bring to those who play it in this spirit are greater than those any money can possibly buy. So in that spirit, of what an amateur truly is, the two amateurs named as the top amateur golfers for 2017 certainly exemplify that amateur spirit of golf. Stuart Haugenstad and Leona McGuire won the honors. Haugenstad was the 2016 U.S. Mid-Am champion and followed up a dream year with an equal one in 2017. He finished 236, earning low amateur at the Masters in April. He played his way through sectionals to qualify for the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, and although he missed the 36-hole cut, acquitted himself quite well. He was invited to be the only mid-am on the Walker Cup team and sealed the win for the U.S. on the second day singles. Haugenstad had three goals for 2017. Number one was to prepare the best of his ability for the Masters, make the Walker Cup team, and number three, defend his mid-am title. Well, the first two on the list were accomplished, but the third ended in the first round of match play this year in the mid-am. All in all, Haugenstad had a dream year after his 2016 U.S. mid-am win and will return to his commercial real estate business. Leona McGuire, it was presumed that the number one ranked woman amateur would leave Duke after she won the Ladies British Amateur last summer, but she had other ideas. McGuire from Ireland has played in three Curtis Cup teams, including the winning GB&I team in 2016. She was even a member of the Irish golf team in the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, finishing 21st. She has won the ACC individual title twice, as well as two Annika Awards as the top female collegiate player of the year. With three Mark McCormick medals signifying the top female amateur golfer in the world, she tied Lydia Ko as the only other golfer to achieve that milestone. So Leona, we've talked about this before, she decided not to pursue her LPGA Tour card via Q School because it cannot be deferred until she finishes the spring college golf season. And that was her top priority. She has secured Sumatra Tour status for 2018, and even though she qualified, will not compete in final stage of LPGA Q School. When she hits the Sumatra Tour in May, there will be still be enough time to either win three events and move directly to the LPGA Tour or earn enough prize money to earn her full card for 2019. McGuire knows the LPGA is not going anywhere, and she will have plenty of time to be a professional once her collegiate eligibility is used up. She's playing the game for the joy and to compete with her fellow Duke teammates. That is a true definition of an amateur. And, Carlos, before I wrap this up, I had a chance, I think I've mentioned this, I was on the range at the Marathon Classic here in July, and Leona was there hitting balls, and it was a very hot day, and I wanted to watch her for a little bit, so there was a bench there, so I walked over and sat on the bench where I could watch her hit balls, watch her practice, and there was another lady sitting on the bench, and we struck up a conversation, and it was her mother. Her mother was visiting from Ireland. She and her husband are both school teachers in Ireland, and so they're not wealthy people. They're average, everyday working people. And she was tickled to be able to come over here and spend a couple weeks with her daughter, traveling around and watching her play. I think because they're teachers, and Leona gets that education is very important, and she wants to stay in school. She wants to finish out her collegiate career. That's really good stuff. So anyhow, Carlos, that's all I'm going to say about that. But the complete listing, if anybody wants to see it, for the 2017 Global Golf Post Amateur Winners can be found in the November 27th issue of the digital magazine. Just type in globalgolfpost.com. It'll take you right to it, Carlos.
And who would think about Leona McGuire is a player that I can't wait to start seeing. I think she's going to be a great golfer. She's going to have a great career. Who would have thought that she, at age of 9, gave up a promising swimming career. She was even a better swimmer back then, and she could have been a great swimmer, but she gave it up to concentrate on golf. And she's playing there in Duke also with her twin sister, Lisa McGuire. She's just who is also an accomplished golfer by herself. She's 15 minutes younger than her twin. So with that, we wrap up our Par 5 news, and now we're going to go for our practice range, where every week Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us will take our own shots at it, and we're going to be talking about betting on golf. I like this topic, and you'll know why in a little while, but also we have reinforcements after this. We're going to have our VIG, very important guest of the week. It's a friend of the Back Nine Report, Ryan Ballingy. I love his stuff when he writes there for his website, the Golf News Network. Great guy, great knowledge. So you're going to enjoy that interview. That's going to be talking about golf, betting on golf. But let's start with the topic as usual. I do the introduction, and let me tell you that betting on sports is very common in golf. And not so far here, but let's say that the NFL and collegiate football is vastly popular in the U.S., and one of the reasons is the huge industry surrounding betting on every game. There's also a fairly sizable contingent that bets on other sports like golf, for example. So who bets on golf? Who doesn't like a friendly wager on the golf course? When you are playing golf with your buddies, does this carry over and relate to the need to bet on golf outside of your own game? When a professional tour pro is standing over a 5-foot putt to win a $1 million, that is the ultimate gamble. I know they take a lot of time. That's what I hate. But anyway, they're asking themselves, will I not make that putt? That's what they're thinking. That's so long time. But yes, there's a skill. There's a mental fortitude and hours of practice and minutes of thinking more there. But it still is a gamble. Golf by its nature, very nature, it's gambling at its core. You're gambling with the shot that you're going to take of the tee shot. Will I hit a fade? Will I just get straight through? Would I go flag hunting? No, let me just try to play the green with the slope that it has. It's a gamble everywhere. Fred, let's go right to it. Is it legal in the U.S.? And if it is, how do you bet on it wherever you have to?
Well, currently, gambling on any sporting event is only legal in the state of Nevada. In the interview that you're going to hear, Ryan points out that there is a big test case right now in New Jersey, and if sports gambling becomes legal there, several states already have tentatively passed legislation that would make gambling on sports events legal in their states as well. So, you know, how do you bet on it? It's not really legal anywhere except Las Vegas. Well, you can walk up to any sports book out there in any casino, place bets on any team or game going on really anywhere in the world. For most of us, betting is only available through an online service, which is housed in an offshore location. Risky? Yes. But most of these sites do millions of dollars every day in sports betting. Betting sites also provide other bets than just win or lose. If someone becomes serious about betting on golf, they need to fully understand the various options and bets available. Ryan referred to a few of these in his interview also. He refers to BetSDI.com, BetSDI.com. And if you're interested in learning more, that's a good place to start. Visit there, look at all the odds, look at all the different bets that you can do. I would advise a visit to that site and do a little research. The other way to bet on sport is fantasy leagues, such as used on FanDuel or DraftKings. Now, they're available in the U.S. You can even form competitions with your friends to keep score. And, Carlos, I think you're going to tell us a little bit more about fantasy leagues.
Oh, definitely. Of course, DraftKings and the FanDuel are the top fantasy websites right now available. And I can tell you this. To me, that is just a way to legalize a little bit of gambling on any sport. In golf, of course, they have the fantasy leagues. It's not only DraftKings and FanDuel. ESPN has theirs. Sporting News has theirs as well. There are plenty of sites that you can go, even fantasy, bet on fantasy golf. There's a ton of them. Other websites, CBS Sports has their own fantasy golf picks, RotoGrinders, RotoWire, Athlon Sports, and I can keep naming and naming. And they offer you all sorts of best scenarios you can have on your own league. And the best thing of all is that they can play daily, so you can set up your team for every day of the tournament. You don't have to pick the winner outright. You can say, okay, who's going to have the best first round? Who's going to have the best second round? You make a team out of that, 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. It depends on which league you're playing and what you're playing for. So in a way, you can also earn money. So if you come to think about how you do that, it's a way of betting on golf, because you're betting to win some money. You're spending money as well and expecting something in return, just a different way that you would do it in Vegas, where you would play maybe for the score, for how many shots this player is going to do. There's all sorts of different types of bettings. And like you said, I used to write on Bleacher Report, where we both met, Fred and I, one of the things that I used to do a lot, and it was my top, one of my top reports, was the bets, the odds of the players to win a tournament. And that's why I like to always, when we have our reviews,
previews majors,
for major tournaments, we always try to get, hey, who's going to win this tournament? Who's our top player for this or for that? So how do they – I used to put the odds there, and how do you present the best odds? It's a difficult thing. It's not easy. You have to try to see who's not only hot playing right now, but – who has been by nature, by history, having a great history on that course, or maybe on those type of courses, like link courses or seaside courses. There's a lot of things that you have to go through to establish the odds. But basically, most of the time, you would go with the top of the players and start to establish a little bit of the odds, how you would think they will be favored to play, and start putting the different dividends on how much they would pay. But definitely it will depend. Most of it is the top players, and from the top players you start going down and see who has done better. Definitely you have to go for the course, the type of courses, and all sorts of plethora. If this would get open, like it's being in Vegas, in all of the states, I don't know, but it will be a big, big thing. Right now, fantasy world is big, but do you think, Fred, that opening this up would enhance golf and help it in the long run?
Well, the short answer to that question is yes. But let me talk about that for a little bit. For years, betting on golf has been legal in Europe and other parts of the world. Watch any broadcast of the Open Championship, for example, and they are going to reference the punters or odds makers that make the bets in Europe for every sport imaginable. Over 80 million is bet on the NFL every week, just every week. And college football isn't too far behind that number. The amount bet on golf is not near that amount. It's a small fraction, but it is significant nonetheless. The better question is, do the people that bet on golf actually play golf? I don't have any statistics to support what I'm about to say, but I'm guessing the majority of people that bet on golf do play at least occasionally. But I don't think they're hardcore golfers that work at their game or want to succeed or play the game just for the joy of playing the game. Gambling on golf does fill a need for some people to have a wager, to feel they're part of the action they see on TV. Betting on the golf course has long been the norm. who doesn't like to have a small wager on a round with her buddies, keeps the game interesting. I do advise keeping the stakes relatively low so no one gets hurt and friendships are broken. Formal gambling on golf for every tournament has never become a big issue in this country. It is done, but not to a great extent. If it were to become a big deal, could a professional golfer who was near the lead bet on someone else and make sure he tanked at the end to assure a win for his bet? That's always the concern for any professional sport where gambling is involved. For the most part, the PGA Tour pays out so much prize money, it would be ludicrous to throw a tournament to win a bet. But on the minor tours and smaller events with lower purses, not as deep a field, I'm sure this sort of thing has happened in the past and will probably happen in the future. When a professional tour pro is standing over a 5-foot putt to win that million, as you said, that's the ultimate gamble. So golf, by its very nature, involves gambling. Betting has nearly ruined boxing because it is easily controllable. Two combatants in the ring, win or lose, football, soccer, basketball, baseball, all have mano y mano, winners and losers in every game, and are easy to bet on. I know you love horse racing, a sport that is closely followed by gamblers. It's nearly as popular for its gambling on, you know, on the outcomes. Probably, if you total it up, it probably is close to football or maybe more. I'm not sure. You might even know those numbers. But again, in horse races, there's normally a limited field. Plus, the horse racing industry has every statistic imaginable to track and predict a winner, and that's all for gamblers. Golf is different in that there are so many moving parts in every tournament. The weather, the course, the speed. Is it firm? Is it slow? You know, is it hot? Is it rainy? I mean, whatever. It's hard for a potential gambler to factor all of those variables to confidently pick a winner, Carlos. Carlos, you there? Carlos, you there? We seem to have lost Carlos for the minute. We're getting right down to the end of the show here. We've covered everything. We haven't had the interview from Ryan Belanger yet, and hopefully Carlos will come back on in a second, and we can get that in there. That kind of wraps up everything I was going to say about gambling. I think Carlos had some closing comments yet. I just have my final putts to talk about, so I'm going to go ahead and start those, and hopefully Carlos will come back in to get the last couple things in here. So I'll save this first when Carlos comes back in, because I found this interesting and I wanted to involve him. But you know, a couple of weeks ago, Carlos asked me if I thought Shanshan Fang would open the floodgates to a host of Chinese golfers that would dominate golf around the world. I answered at the time that I felt the Chinese government would have to get on board and stop discouraging golf participation in that country for that to happen. Plus, we have been predicting an influx of Chinese golfers that would compete at the highest levels in the future. Well, it appears we're not alone in that theory. Both Gary Player and Annika Sorenstam are singing the same tune. They both feel there is a deep field of talented players that, given the tools, given the time to practice, given all the advantages, will be able to successfully compete on the biggest stages in golf. And we're talking about the PGA Tour. We're talking about the European Tour, everything here, the LPGA Tour for the women. So, you know, the government over there seems to hinder golf maybe more than they help it at times. So if the government gets on board, sees the benefits of the game for all of its citizens, then hopefully that will be the case. But Until then, I think it's going to be a little bit sporadic. We've got some medical news tonight to talk about. Gerald Lyle. So you back?
I'm back.
Oh, great. Hey, why don't you jump in and do your close for the
I'm gonna go right to Ryan. I think after what you said, I mean, you had a lot of my thoughts in it, definitely.
Okay.
On my closing, I think the listeners have gotten a big view of what this is. I just wanted to add that with the fantasy also, to one point that you were saying about having a lot of tools available for betting, fantasy is providing a lot of data analytics and all those things that you can think of, all the variables right now to help the same fantasy players to make their rosters, to set the rosters daily. So it would just be an extension to it. But like you said, it's going to be a lot of things that the fans are going to have to look at when they're going to start making their bets. But I think this is something that is going to come. There's a lot of upside, not only for the sports, but for the governments as well, as they can cash in into this. So, but anyway, let's listen to Ryan Ballingy. I mean, he's a great friend of Backman Report, plus he's a golf insider that has been posting weekly fantasy golf columns to his website, www.thegolfnewsnet.com, every week for many years. He understands the complexity of gambling and golf and recently posted an article entitled The Essential Guide to Betting on Golf. In this interview, Ryan will give us some background on gambling and professional golf and information to help any of our listeners that may want to learn more. So let's go right into it.
We're happy to be talking to our good friend, Ryan Ballingy. Hey, Ryan, welcome to the Back Nine Report. Great to be talking to you again.
Thanks for having me on, Fred.
Ryan is a golf insider and keeps his website www.thegolfnewsnet.com full of the latest news, trends, and information about every aspect of golf. And he recently posted an article about gambling and golf called The Essential Guide to Betting on Golf, and that's what we want to talk to him about tonight. The NFL is so vastly popular in the United States because of the millions of people that like to bet on the sport. Does golf have that large of a following of gamblers that this is a big deal?
It's not nearly the size of, in this country, either professional football for the NFL or even college football, which has become popular in terms of betting and also just viewership. But the people that do bet on golf are hardcore golf fans. They do it most weeks, follow most tournaments. So they're a valuable audience because, one, most golfers tend to be a little bit wealthier than other sports fans, which means they might put a little bit more action on things. And also because they're so loyal and because they follow the sport so closely, they're likely to be repeat customers.
If I wanted to get started, and I've never gambled on golf in my life. I know, like at the majors, we look at the odds makers and see what the odds are. If I want to start gambling on golf, how would I go about it? How do you start?
You have a couple of different choices, of course, and they kind of range depending on where you are in terms of geography. Obviously, if you're overseas, you have a lot more options in terms of legal betting, either in person or online, than you do here in the United States. In the United States, legally betting, there's really only one jurisdiction where you can do it, and that's in Nevada. That may soon be changing. There's a case in front of the Supreme Court right now for New Jersey to be able to legalize sports betting, and if they do it, you may see a bevy of other states. Basically, they have another number of states actually have legislation in the wings, either already passed or just waiting on governors' desks to legalize sports betting in the event that it becomes legal on a national level. And that there is some thought that may change in the next year to 18 months, that it could come that soon. You can also bet on parlays only on the NFL in the state of Delaware, which is a unique thing. But otherwise, as an American, you have some options, but most of them are all come with some risk. They're all either online or with your local bookie. And then that kind of varies to degrees on what sports they offer, the odds that they offer, the juice that they have in terms of their cut. So you kind of have to be careful, but if you're a discerning customer, if you're a discerning consumer, you can find places to go that you trust, and most of them, especially the ones that are overseas or out of this country and through online, will give you a good bonus for your first deposit.
We've heard a lot over the years about DraftKings and some of these other things, and it involves in fantasy golf. And so how is fantasy golf and gambling related? Is there a tie-in there?
There is, in this sense, that fantasy golf, especially on the daily fantasy side, and I would say this is particularly true with DraftKings, not quite as much with FanDuel, but it is with them too. You see the pricing each week if you play daily fantasy golf, weekly fantasy golf, and you're trying to make a roster based off of those prices. Those prices are kind of implied odds. So if you look each week at the pricing for DraftKings and you look at an odd sheet, either in Vegas or online, you're going to see a lot of similarities. You know, they may not be exactly alike in terms of ranking players one through whatever the number of players are in the field that week, 132, 144, 156, whatever it is, but there's a pretty close correlation. So if you look at the odds and you then look at the DraftKings valuation table, you can get a good sense of who's considered valuable by both because they kind of run parallel. There are some differences each week where you'll see guys that aren't quite as valued highly or as low on one way or the other, and then you kind of have to decide for yourself whether or not who's got it wrong, right? Who got it right or who got it wrong in terms of whether you see a value or they're overpriced. But it is a good place to start for a lot of daily fantasy players to go look at the odds table, go look at what the odds makers think of the field that week and who's most likely to prevail, because they have a good sense in a sport that's hard to predict of guys that are going to do well.
When you're betting, I mean, just on the PGA Tour, for example, I mean, normally there's around 144 or maybe even 156 guys in the field, so you only got like a 1 out of 156 chance. Now, you can rule that down and probably, you know, there's a dozen guys that really have a chance to win, but still the odds are not very good if you're just betting on winning. Is there other ways to bet rather than just bet to win?
Sure. They got a couple of different ways. And to your point, you're having 144, 156 guys every week. I think you can figure most of the time, this is not a universal rule, but if you look beyond guys that are 80 or 100 to 1 or worse, odds are, no pun intended, they're not going to win. So you can kind of rule out that percentage of the field. That could be about as half the field sometimes. So you're reducing the number pretty quickly in terms of what Vegas thinks is going to happen, unless you've got some amazing inkling that a 200 to 1 or 500 to 1 shot is going to pull something off. That all said, if you don't feel comfortable putting money on a guy to win outright each week, there's what's called an each-way bet. And an each-way bet, depending on where you go through the sports book, they will let you have odds to back up your wager that your player either will win, finish second or third. Sometimes they'll go all the way down to eighth place, depending on where you go. So you can say, I'm going to wager $5 that Dustin Johnson is going to finish in the top eight this week, and I'm going to get some payoff if he gets in there. And then that gives you a little bit of insurance that even if your guy, your selected horse, doesn't win, you still get decent odds and you make some money if they finish in that position where you're betting them to finish. And then the other thing that you can do that a lot of people, I think, like to do is head-to-head matchups. And so a lot of sports books will put out each week 72-hole matchups between two players, and you just decide which one has the lower score at the end of the tournament. And if the one player misses the cut, then the other player wins, assuming they finish. So that's an easy one that a lot of people can have fun with. Usually they do it between guys in the same group or past champions of an event. So there's a little bit of intrigue added to that. You can even go so finite as to do it per round. So you could take golfers facing each other for a single round, make it into an 18-hole match, basically, between the two of them, and you can get some odds that way. And that's more like betting on the NFL or an NBA game. You don't get a lot of pop. You know, there's not huge odds one way or the other, as you would get trying to get a guy that is maybe 40 or 50 to 1 to win a golf tournament. But something fun and easy to track.
So there's a lot of different ways to gamble or bet in golfing. But you make a point also in your article that maybe unlike maybe football or some of the other sports, the odds makers are not all that great in predicting the winners on, say, the PGA Tour. You're better off figuring out your own system, maybe look who's been playing well coming into that week or those kind of things.
Yeah, there are a couple of different schools of thought on this. And there's a school of thought out there, and I've talked with a lot of different people over the years that I've done a fantasy golf column every week or even given betting picks, is some people think golf is completely random and that you just take the most talented golfers based on some rubric that you've created and you bet those guys. There are guys that go on the other side and you say, well, you have to pick guys who are not only in form, but they're also a horse for a course. They have a good course record at the horse host course each week because obviously get a lot of repeat hosts on the PGA Tour. And to some extent, I agree with that philosophy. I think you have to do a mix. I think you have to go with the hot hand and you have to go with guys, particularly if you're going to get some value for them, if you're in that 60, 70, 80, 125 to 1 range of guys who have played well at a golf course in the past, but maybe they're playing their absolute best golf right now. Because good golf courses that line up with good golfers have a tendency to create good outcomes. And so that's where you can, I think, get the most value, because Vegas and odds makers tend to prioritize hot hands. They tend to prioritize players who are playing best in terms of odds. So you're going to get worse odds on players that are playing great right now. You're going to get better odds on players that have historically done well at a particular venue but may not have done as well. So if you kind of spread that out a little bit, pick hot hands and a mix of horses for courses, and vary your betting amount so you kind of favor betting a little bit more on the current hot hand that may also have a good record of the golf course, and maybe betting a little bit less on a player who has a historical record but maybe isn't the best golfer, you can get a balanced portfolio. I mean, you think about betting on any sport, betting on golf in particular, because you can bet on so many different players. Think of it like a stock portfolio. You want to be diversified. You want to have different amounts in different stocks, and you have to know when to move things around. So that's the best way to look at it, I think. And then with odds changing between rounds, you can re-up, you can re-bet on golfers at different odds as we get closer to the end of the tournament. So if you feel particularly confident that a certain player is going to pull it out, you can keep hitting them again and again all the way through the completion of 54 holes and maybe even make a little bit more money.
One last question. Is there any one website or odds maker or something that you follow that you watch closely?
We use BetDSI.com. We've used them for a number of years. And I really like that they post odds and give you a live sense of the movement of money. So you can get a sense in real time from their odds how they're changing. And you can also see what percentage of money that they've got is on a particular player. So you can say, okay, well, there's a lot of money on Dustin Johnson this week. Apparently a lot of people think he's going to do well, put up half a unit or something like that on him. But this guy's down here, nobody's putting any action on him. That means these are pretty fresh odds. If we put some action on him, that might move the odds, but we're going to get him at a good value right now. We've used them for a number of years and love using them. And beyond that, I think you just have to be an educated consumer. You have to be able to look around, and if you're willing to put your money in different places, look around for better odds, see how they move, because not everyone moves the same way at the same time. And if you can catch someone off guard and get a good bet in at a good value and you cash, that's going to make you a little bit of extra money. So if you care that much about an extra $10, $20, $50 here and there, then you need to be able to shop around.
Ryan Belangi at thegolfnewsnet.com. Always has the latest information. You want to keep up to date on gambling and betting on golf, he always has some information there. Follow him, thegolfnewsnet.com. Thanks, Ryan, for being on the show.
Thanks, Fred.
And that was our VIG Very Important Guest of the Week, Ryan Belangi. Fred, any final closing comments before we move on to our final thoughts?
No, I think we covered it pretty well, Carlos. Gambling on golf is not really a big deal in this country. It is in Europe and some other parts of the world, but they're going to legalize it. I'm pretty sure they're going to. So it's going to become a bigger deal as we go along, probably.
It will, definitely will. Now let's go to our final thoughts, and as usual, I get the first shot Adam, and the 2017 Race to Dubai winner Tommy Fleetwood will go head-to-head with world number one Dustin Johnson, four-time major champion Rory McIlroy, 2016 Open champion Henrik Stenson, and 2016 Olympic gold medalist Justin Rose in his defense of the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA. They will be joined by American Ryder Cup player in 2016 Olympic bronze medalist Matt Kuchar and two-time Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship winner Paul Casey at the Abu Dhabi Golf Club from January 18th to the 21st. Last year's event boasted the second strongest field of the 2017 European Tour season, and the 126-man field will compete for a prize purse of $3 million, which is an increase of $300,000 from the previous years. McIlroy, who has finished second four times, will make his return from injury as he begins preparations for the Masters in April, which means he will start to look to form in that tournament. One player that has been there a few times has been not a winner, but I'm sure a lot of people will be throwing his name as a possible starter, is Tiger Woods. So who knows? I just don't see it happening. If he's really serious about not overdoing it, he will play this week at the Hero World Challenge, and then we'll skip the long trip to Abu Dhabi and start his 2018 season at one of his old stomping grounds the week after that one, which would be the tournament in Torrey Pines for the Farmers Insurance Open. But, hey, it's good just to guess and see where he's going to be next year. And on my final pod, the Web.com Tour has occasionally given spots in tournament fields to celebrities who are low-handicap golfers. Stephen Carey of the Golden State Warriors received an exemption to the Ellie Mae Classic in August. Jerry Rice and John Smoltz have also teed up on tour. The latest exemption given to a celebrity on that tour goes to country singer Jake Owen. He will be playing the Nashville Golf Open next May on a sponsor's exemption. Owen, who has played in several PGA Tour Pro-Ams, will compete as an amateur. The exemption was announced yesterday. The singer says he's truly honored and knows how hard golfers work to play in this event. He also has said he can't wait for May 21st when the event benefiting Brent Snedeker's foundation will begin. Fred, I have a question for you. What's your take on these celebrities being given those sponsors exemptions that could be given to a player that just needs a chance to get in and earn a check?
Yeah, my take is that, yeah, it takes a spot from a player, but that celebrity being there puts more attention on the tour, so long run, it builds purses and makes more money for the guys that are going to be playing and for even that guy that missed out maybe in another tournament. So it's all good. You know, the Web.com Tour does a really nice job, and it's entertainment business, so, you know, they need to get those big names in there. It's great to see those guys every once in a while do that. You know, Stephen Curry really surprised us. He played surprisingly well out in San Francisco last year, so it was great to see him do that. You know, Smoltz is a great player, has done it before. So, and besides that, I'm a big Jake Owen fan, Carlos, so I kind of can't wait to see how he does in this thing. Carlos, I got a question for you. We got the golf question of the week is back. I know you'll get this because it's fairly obvious, but I tripped across an amazing statistics while preparing for the show this week. And the question is, do you know who holds the record for remaining in the top 50 of the official world golf ranking for the longest period of time?
Sorry, I was in mute. It has to be Tiger Woods. I mean, he has the record for the most weeks.
No, Tiger fell out. No, because he's what? Down to 1,000 now or something? He's down to 1,000, right? No, there's another guy.
Who?
You're wrong. You're wrong.
Who's that?
The answer is, I figured sure you would get this. The answer is Phil Mickelson. He moved into the top 50. This is really an amazing statistic. I'm telling you. He moved into the top 50 of the world ranking in week number 48 in 1993. that's 4 years, 3 years before Tiger even came on tour, before he turned professional. He did that after a runner-up finish at the Japan Casio World Open. He has not dropped out of the top 50 for 24 years. That is an amazing statistic right there. My jaw about dropped when I read that. That can't be right. But that is absolutely amazing. Carlos, I already talked about China thing. So I'll move off of that. We'll skip over that. Gerald Lyle is going to undergo bone marrow transplant and stem cell therapy to fight his leukemia. He's undergone three bouts with leukemia. He's going to do this cutting-edge medical treatment to try and eradicate disease completely, since it has been giving him problems since he was a teenager. His brother, Leighton, will serve as a donor for the bone marrow transplant. The procedure really is only given a 25% chance of success, but Lyle is grasping at any method possible to fight the cancer. He will enter a hospital in Melbourne tomorrow on Wednesday to begin the procedure. Prayers from all of us here are with the Lyles. And one more bit of medical news tonight, Carlos. Before we close, I want to give a shout-out to my good friend and someone we have had on the Back Nine Report, longtime Toledo Blade sports writer Dave Hackenberg. Dave has been bothered by kidney problems over the past few years and needed a transplant. His daughter stepped up, and just before Thanksgiving, doctors in Toledo performed the kidney swap. Dave is doing well and hopes for a complete recovery. He looks forward to playing with his grandkids and getting back to writing a few lines here and there. So hopefully I can even maybe get him to venture out to a golf course next summer and chase around the little white ball a little bit. Carlos, that wraps up the Back Nine Report for November 28th, 2017. It's Tiger Week. Tiger, he's coming Thursday.
Can't wait. And I also want to second that thought. Shout out to Dave Hackenberg. I saw his post in Facebook and really, really touching what how his daughter made him know that she was going to give him her kidney, with a kidney being inside a box. That was really, really touching. But hey, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Ryan Belangi. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Al ver la apertura en su labio superior, los otros niños se burlaban de Jane Rose y la llamaban hendidura. Pero entonces, una cirugía de Operation Smile lo cambió todo.
Mi nombre ya no es hendidura. Soy simplemente hermosa.
Cada 3 minutos nace un niño con un labio hendido. Infórmate cómo puedes cambiar la vida de un niño para siempre. Visita OperationSmile.org ahora.
Has this ever happened to you? You put some money in a savings account with a great rate. But that promotional savings rate came crashing down. You deserve better. Take just 5 minutes and open a Capital One savings account online. You'll get one of the nation's best rates that's not a promotional rate. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet?
For consumers only. Offered by Capital One NA, member FDIC. Copyright 2017 Capital One.